Shusti Rashida Shkayach, thank you very much for having me. So clearly the things I'm supposed to say, which the camera is not supposed to hear. That's Bihashgacha, obviously. So on my way here, I noticed there was a sign. My Hebrew is much to be desired. But basically, I was able to understand that it says you're not allowed to hang signs on this wall. And somebody was hanging a sign on that wall. And somebody else asked him, again, wasn't sure I was following 100% the conversation, but basically somebody else asked him, why are you hanging a sign on the wall when the sign says no hanging signs on the wall? And the person answered, well, that guy violated the law. He hung a sign on the wall. So why can't I? So the emphasis is that life is full of stiras. Life is full of contradictions. Chayr, it's a good time. Many years ago, I once saw someone hang up one of those big Yerushalayim Dikah signs. Someone else came and ripped it off. And then he went and hung it up again. And the person asked him, why you hang up the sign if others are ripping it off? And his answer was something which I think we can all internalize in many different ways. He said, a sign that somebody doesn't want to rip off is not worth hanging. Life is full of stiras. Life is full of contradictions. If you've ever noticed, you pass by a store and it says Kamoi Brooklyn, right? The bakery Kamoi Brooklyn. It's really not Kamoi Brooklyn because for whatever reason, black and whites never made it to Yerushalayim. Not 100% sure why. It's basically a Ruggalach city. And even the black and whites that are supposed to be black and whites are not mamish. But it's Kamoi Brooklyn. But if you walk on 16th Avenue, there's a sign that says, you know, Hadar Geula. So when you're in Geula, somehow people are craving for Brooklyn. When you're in Brooklyn, people are craving for Geula. How does it work exactly? You could argue the grass is greener on the other side of the fence. I think that there's something deeper than that. Has to be something deeper than that. So I was in a shul somewhere. I was trying to rest up a few moments. It was in camp. It was a shul in Ferndale. Anyone here ever in Ferndale? And I went downstairs. Good. I went downstairs. Feel better now. And I went down. You know, there's an old Ferndale shul. And I went downstairs and was trying to learn something over there. Just peace and quiet. I was taking care. I was in Camp Aguda and I was assistant learning director. So I learned a lot of things then. Like there was a kid that was kicking and screaming and yelling and I had to physically hold him up and carry him to the manal. And the manal told me that could be another pshat, an ashrei mi shebola kan v'talmidoi biyodoi. So here I am, I'm in this shul, and I thought I'm going to relax a little bit. And someone's coming down the stairs. Now it's not my shul. Anyone has a right to come in, especially one of the locals that has more bialis than I do. And he comes in and he's standing over there and he's making a lot of noise. He's coming with a bunch of plastic bags and it's really, really making a lot of noise. It was annoying me terribly. And then at one point he takes out a coffee and he's having a hard time getting the cover off. And finally he got the cover off and part of the coffee all over the notes that I was trying. And I was smiling at him. And finally he comes over to me. And he gives, you know what it's like getting a slap on the back when you're not in the mood of getting a slap on the back? This was a big slap on the back. And he turns around, and I wasn't going to say anything because the maestro, he has every right to be there. Then he started complimenting me. He was saying how his anekloch listened to my story tapes. And when he finished his whole slew of compliments, he sat back down, and I noticed something. I didn't hear him making any more noise. And before that, he was really noisy. When he was drinking this coffee, it was like the loudest slurp you ever heard. And in between swallows, it was this, ah. And all of a sudden, I didn't hear the noises anymore. So suddenly, when he wasn't invading my space, the noise wasn't noise. I don't know why, but every time I come to Yerushalayim, I can't understand why no one ever wrote a book about buses. It's very hard to understand. It's different than buses anywhere in the entire world. People get on the front door, they get on to the back door. How does that work exactly? And it works on an honor system. And you have this packed bus. And what's that card called? The Kava, what? What's it? Rav Kav. So it's one being passed all the way from the Ezra's Noshim in the back, all the way up to the front. Tell the driver three fares and one for my tante yesterday who didn't pay. That's how it goes. And the driver says, well, maza tante. You know, this is like going back and forth. Works on a whole different system than the world. And the other thing is that this is probably the only country in the world or the only city in the world where whenever the bus leaves, there's someone running after the bus. No such a thing as a bus leaving without someone running after the bus. And there's always people on the bus that are screaming, you know, nahag, nahag, wah, wah, someone's running. I can't imagine on the F train, people screaming to the conductor, someone's running for the train, or on the Coney Island Avenue bus. So there's a sense of connection. When I say sense of connection, sometimes you're sitting in a little taxi and these two buses are creaming on both sides and you feel there's going to be some sense of connection over here. But I mean, there's a sense of feeling. There's something is drawing people close. It's very hard to understand. People push to get onto the bus, but then they turn around and they're worried about the next guy. And I think that the analogy is that in our life, we're on a bus. That's just the way it is. We're all on a bus. And the bus stops and there's an interchange and you get onto the next bus. And the morale says that when a Kadosh Baruch Hu looks at us, he doesn't just look at us. He looks at us from Har Sinai until Mashiach. And we're each on a bus together. And when we reach the end of our generation, the next generation takes over and it moves on. I remember many years ago I was coming, then it was still the number two bus from the Kaisel, and there was a lot of trouble in the Harabayas area, what else is new? And everyone was a little nervous. And someone started singing, Misha, Misha, Misha Nechazad. And the whole bus was singing. It was fascinating to watch. It was, you know, from every walk of life, of Yiddishkeit, we're all singing. And the driver was very nervous. And he was screaming that people should stop singing. And the more he was asking to stop singing, the louder the more people joined in. The whole bus was chiming in. Finally, like in the middle of, I don't know where, Le'er Shar Shechem, he slams on the brakes. And he gets up and he says, Maze Chatuna. Someone gets up, Ken Chatuna, and everyone starts singing, oh, I just right? I felt like I was in my English class in sixth grade. This is what we did to the teacher. It was like deja vu all over again. There is something in Eretz Yisrael that is, people will yell at you. See, two Israelis will yell at each other, top of their lungs, and all of a sudden they're best friends. There's a certain understanding that we're here. We're all in a bus ride, and the entire generation is a bus ride. And we, to a certain degree, we all are hechroi, one for another. Why do people dance by a chasana? What's so exciting? This guy's getting married. Why should I dance? And the answer is because you're part of this generation. Because you're part of this generation, your hechrayis is to pass Torah from the previous dar to the next dar. Without a wedding, it can't be done. And you do it by someone else's wedding, and that person does it by your wedding. It says in the Sefer Talmud Devarim that the union of Achnasas Kala represents the ultimate chibur between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is where we are. And also notice, in trucks in New York, say, there's a sign in the back that says, how am I driving? And over here, there's like a sign at the back of a bus, Ima Rechav Azeh Ma'ala Ashan, right? So I don't know what exactly you're supposed to do. But I think if we continue the analogy, and we're all sitting on a bus, and your friend is overheating, you know, calm him down. Because this is our achrayas of being together. Remember when I was teaching 12th grade, Nishan Kedach, so one kid said, Rebbe, I can't take the Gemara test. I can't take the Gemara. I said, why not? He says, because we're having an economics test tomorrow. So I said, you know, once you get married, your whole life is an economics test, okay, from morning to night. So if you're not going to learn then, if you're not going to learn under a test, you'll never be able to learn. So it says in the Medrash, Isha Muna Rav Brachais, person of Amuna Rav Brachais Zeh Moshe. Otz Lahashir, who's the stubborn one, Zeh Kairach. And Svasemis explains like this. Multiple numbers are distancing themselves from Kedusha. Kedusha is Echad, is one. So the United States federal deficit, which is up to $32 trillion, we understand is very far from Kedusha. So, but Lamaisa, life is full of numbers. What do you want me to do? I live on the fifth floor, so I'm living in Tumah. I got to live on the first floor. What does this mean? Echad is Kedusha. We started out by saying life is full of contradictions. As Hashem is working, you're going to go into Shiduchim. Many people will experience, hey, what I want doesn't want me. And what wants me, I don't want. You know the story that someone comes, a young man gets married and the mother never wanted the Shidduch. She never wanted the Shidduch. And finally they come home for Shabbos and this, she's a real Shvigar, Kechal Chukas, a Shvigar, Kechukasay, and she's really like looking down at her daughter-in-law. She's so angry. And she knows she's not supposed to mix in. That she knows, right? You know the story, the son-in-law went and bought his mother-in-law a gorgeous handkerchief, gold lace, some Tiffany's. Said, I did this for Shalom Bayis' mother. Very good. Do me a favor, you keep your nose only in this, and we will have Shalom Bayis. So she looks and she says, let me see what my son's talus looks like now that he's under the jurisdiction of this new wife who imposed herself upon here and dared married my son. And she takes out the talus and she sees it's gross, it's disgusting. It is full of yuck. It's full of terrible, terrible things. Mustard, mayonnaise, potatoes, last year's charoisis. And she's like, okay, she's not supposed to say anything, but she is about to explode. And finally, just at the point that she says to her son, tell me about your talus. Because, Ma, what's in my talus? Tell me about your talus. She's about to lace it on the shvig. He goes, Ma, I didn't bring my talus. I forgot it. I borrowed Tati's today. Okay? The Mishkan represents Geula. The Ramban says that the entire Sefer Shemois is called Sefer HaGeula, including the Parshiyos of Truma Tetzava VaYakol Pekudei. Where's Geula in Mishkan? Geula in Mishkan is the idea that so much effort went into the Mishkan. Nediv Lev, our full heart, everything went into the Mishkan. Beyond imagination, how much Kedusha went into the Mishkan. But for what? You put it up, and a day later you take it down. And not only that, I never know. I never know where I'm standing. I never know if you're taking it down a day later, or 2 days later, or 3 days later, or a year later. And the answer is that's where the bracha is. The bracha in Gul is, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, there are contradictions in my life. I'm going to live with it. I'm going to deal with it. The Melech Bidema says a beautiful story about a bachur that comes to ask for a nedava for Achnasas Kala, and the man comes out and he yells at him, you're all a bunch of lazy good-for-nothings. What are you doing? Why do you keep ringing my doorbell? And the kid is just smiling away. He finally gives him a big check. So they said to the kid, okay, how are you able to stand there? He says, I was told this person gets very annoyed when you ring his bell. He yells and he screams. And the higher he yells and screams, the more he feels bad. And afterwards, he turns around and he gives you a big check. So at first, I was scared he's not yelling loud enough. But when he started really getting angry at me, Baruch Hashem, I smiled. And of course, it was a catch-22, because the more he was smiling, the more angry he was getting. There are things in our lives that will only come out when we're yelled at. So again, I don't know why I'm on a roll here tonight, but this lady, Erev Shabbos, she's screaming her head off. And finally, one person can't take it, so he just starts screaming Shalom Aleichem in the next room. And this guy knocks on the door. He goes, why are you screaming Shalom Aleichem? He goes, it's to drown out your Eishes Chayil. Okay. So many years ago, I'm driving to Lakewood, and this is way, way back when. And all they have a basket. There's no easy pass. It was a new thing. They had a basket. You threw in the money into it. There was a basket, and you threw the money into the basket. And you had to have exact change. There's a famous story of Aaron. The first time they did it, he asked the driver to go to the person. Let the person know there's a human being, and a basket is not taken. He said, Rabbi, you don't know what you did for me. He said, good night to him. If you want to know, Ma bin doiris v'shoinim, l'doiris v'achroinim. So a few years ago, I'm driving, and I told my kids this story, and there was an easy pass of one choice, and there still was a human being on the other one. I said, let's do it. And I pull up, and the guy's on his smartphone, and I'm waiting, and he goes, you have easy pass. What are you bugging me for? Instead of the world changed, there was a time that people actually appreciated when you talked to them and said hello to them. That was during Sir Byron's time. Now we kind of lost it. It just went off a little bit. So I'm here in Yerushalayim a couple of years ago, and I was really in a big rush. We were supposed to have this whole nesiyah up north, and I was davening a sikkun someplace, And there was a man davening for the Amid, and he was saying this long Kaddish. So long. I was going out of my mind. And after he finished, and I noticed little by little people were disappearing from this minyan. And I learned that if you I take off my tefillin before the last Kaddish, it never works by me. I always wound up looking for my coat, looking for my hat. But he was going on and on. His Kaddishim were getting longer and longer. And finally, my wife is calling me, we gotta go. And I'm about to run out. And he said, he wants to say a Perek Mishnayis and then a Kaddish. And he's saying, Yingaman, vu leifstu, vu geistu. And I'm like, I gotta run. Blind of thine art! Stay where you are. Okay, I'm staying where I am. Then he tells me, du weißt noch, wem ich sag Kaddish? You know after whom I'm saying Kaddish? I said, no, after whom? He says, noch Shimon. I said, oh no, now I'm gonna hear Shimon was his long lost one, Ben Yochid that died. And here he's saying Kaddish after him, and I'm leaving, and that's so hurtful. And he's saying Kaddish after Shimon, and Mamish, I have tears in my eyes. He says, du weißt wie alt Shimon gewesen? You know how old Shimon was when he was Nifter? No, how old was Shimon when he was Nifter? He says he was 98. Nabuch. Okay. Then he says, so I'm about to leave. He goes, ne, Yingaman. He says, du hast gegessen kosher by Stalin? Did you eat kosher by Stalin? He was asking to eat kosher in Stalin. I wasn't happy what he was saying. I don't know if he was saying Stalin. Okay, yeah. He says, I never ate kosher by Stalin. He goes, du hast gehitten Shabbos by Stalin. He said, no, I wasn't shomer Shabbos by Stalin, but I figure if he goes to all Tariq mitzvahs now, if he wants to know if I did it by Stalin, the time he gets to Pinyan Petach Chamor, if I did it by Stalin, I'm out of here. He says, Shimon. And he keeps saying, Yigamah, zetz techavek. Bottom line is, Shimon, I found out, was a person that taught kids Aleph Beis under the most difficult of circumstances. And this fellow over here was there with them, and they were caught by the KGB, and they were sent to Siberia. And what did he do there? He taught Aleph Beis again. And that particularly Shalashudis was a big time for him. And Shalashudis in Siberia, they went into some kind of a hole, and Shimon would sing all the Negunim, and he stood there with a watch, and they would tell, okay, enough, let's get out of here before we're caught. Because if you're caught in Siberia, where do they send you? They send you really up north. And then he was saying, no, you know, Shimon would say, no, until Rabbeinu Tam's man, he's not stopping to sing Zmiris. And he goes on that Lamaisa, Shimon wound up in Eretz Yisrael, and he said he lived in Yerushalayim for as many years as he was in Siberia. And he died a very old man. He died the day of his birthday, Shabbos, Shalashudas time, at Rabbeinu Tam's man. That's what he tells me. So he says, when I'm saying Kaddish for Shimon, don't get in my way. And I walked out, and my wife was upset why I was late, and I said, you know, I'm never going to forget that story. And there hasn't been a Shalashudas yet, it was about 7 years ago, that I didn't say when. I'm not rushing out of Shalashudas. Okay? Remember years ago, I davened in a shul someplace, it was out of town, wherever it was, and the guys were zoop, and Shachas just disappeared. And I was back to maybe 15 years later. And I noticed davening was much slower, and I asked the Gabbai, I said, is davening slower? He said, we used to be in a big rush, he said. And but look around at us, he says, now we see where people wound up going. We're not in such a big rush, he says. So every Shalashudas in my life is now different because I heard the story of Shimon. But it would have not been different if I just heard the story of Shimon. It had to be that I was under pressure. It had to be that there was a contradiction, and that's how it came out. I went to visit a Yid now in Yerushalayim Meishar, and my kids used to eat by him a lot. And I said, you know, I called him up and I explained to him, I want to see the place where my kids ate all the years, all my bachrim that were here. So he tells me, you have to come by day. So I said, okay, I can't come by night. He says, no. So I said, fine, you tell me why not. So he says, by night, they fold up the table and they spread out cots and it becomes a bedroom. So I said, and that's where, all of a sudden I say, you know, I don't have to come anymore. So I want to share something with you. When I was a kid, I was not from the best learners. And I'm still not. I had some kind of a focusing issue. You may realize that as I dance from story to story. And I had a Rebbe in fourth grade that divided the class into three. There was the Mitsuyan line. That was the top line. And in the middle, there was the Beinoni line. And there was the row, which he called Goylem's row. Goylem's row was for all the Goylems. And yours truly was in the middle of the Goylem row. Everything was very specific. And I never even thought of going off the derech because of that, because somehow I just thought it was normal. I was in Goylem's row. And once I came into class, mind you, this is third grade, and I came into class, and there was an electrician fixing the lights, the ballast in Goylem's row. All that row of lights, Goylem's row, went off. After all, it is Goylem's row, right? So we were in the way of the electrician. So the electrician said, go sit in the middle. So I went to sit in the middle. And I, being the Goylem, but it was thought that I was promoted to the middle. And I was so happy. And then as soon as the lights went on, I was told to go back to be a Goylem. And I came home and I mentioned it to my parents that I thought I was out of Goylem's row. But then when they fixed the lights, I was sent back into the Goylem's row. And I remember my father didn't say anything. Just 2 weeks later, he took me out of the yeshiva. He said that there was a different chayt that needed kids. Didn't say what type of kids, you needed kids. So years later, when I chapped why he took me out of the yeshiva, so I said, why didn't you like blow up? You know what I mean? Goylem's row. Why didn't you like start screaming and say, Goylem's row, how could this have happened? So he said to me, I was very angry when I heard the story, but the last thing I wanted was for you to become a victim and to go around saying, you know, my Rebbe put me into Goylem's row. And then he told me the only one that can decide whether you're a Goylem or not is you yourself. You're the only one that can make that decision. No one can make a decision for you. And I think back, and I can't imagine how much of a bracha that was. And we live in a society that likes to blame. It doesn't mean that people aren't hurt and people aren't victimized. I'm not saying that. But we live in a society that's looking to blame someone else. And all the Rabbeinu Hashem wants is for us, just take a chrayus of my own life. And if someone hurt me, okay, so very good. So now I have a much more clear picture how to address the situation and prevent people from hurting others. Carry it that way. Take the stira in your life and use it. Now, I am one of the most disorganized people in the world. Levi, how many times did I call you to ask you directions over here, right? And then he sends me a cab at 1:45. I show up at 4:15, 5:30. I'm just a little disorganized. I was always that way. I had a roommate that was like the biggest yekka in town. He was so organized, you can't imagine. And so he once said that you don't have any seder in your life, and you should know because you don't have any seder in your life, you're rachuk of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I said, just the opposite. I'm so close to it. You wake up in the morning, you know exactly where everything is. And you're in Seder on time. By me, 7 o'clock, the Mashgiach is banging on the door. Shechter! You're not in the Smedish. In 1 minute, you're suspended. And I get up and I'm going, Rabban Shem, where's my glasses? Rabban Shem, where's my nagel glasses? Rabban Shem, where's my other sock? I need Rabban Shem all the time. Where are you connected with the Rabban Shem, right? What's the connection over there? Where are you? Anyway, so then we were Rebbeim together, yeshiva. And I remember Friday afternoon, the kids are already on the bus. I'm saying to the bus driver, wait, I'm trying to make the copies. This is like before Sukkot, and he's already making his copies for like Boimer. And he's standing in front of me by the copy machine. He was there first. I said, the guys are on the bus. That's how it was. And I hadn't seen him for years. For years I hadn't seen him. And all of a sudden, I'm parking my good old 1993 Chevy Astro, and it starts pouring. I have no umbrella, I have no jacket, I have no nothing. And I open up the door, and I'm looking for, and I find some old little pitsy umbrella with a little stick, the kind that when you press the button, you know, your finger gets caught in the, you know what I mean? And I'm running with it, and I go, oh no, my friend is coming. I haven't seen him in years. And of course, he's coming with a regular coat and a chain coat and boots and galoshes and this big double-decker umbrella. And I'm coming by this little thing. And to my mazel, as I pass, you know, one of the, you know, kaparas of Linus moments is when the wind comes and blows your umbrella upside down. And he looks at me and says, nothing changed, right? Same person that you were all along. Nothing changed. So I said to him, I want to show you something. And my upside-down umbrella is... I turn around, where the wind zaps it back into place. I said, you can't fight the wind. But if you turn directions, the same wind that knocks the umbrella out of your place, that same wind knocks the umbrella into place. How's that? Huh? So he said, and that's the reason I walk around with this umbrella. He goes, yeah, that's the reason you walk around. So he said, you really want to know, I'll tell you something. I remind him that it's pouring, and I'm standing with this upside-down umbrella, and he's with his... And he says, give me a minute. And I heard that he was going through a hard time. And he said, "One, I lost my job," and he's having a problem with a child. And he says, "I got onto the number 3 bus in Bar Ilan. I made it the last second, and I'm going to the coast, and I'm going to bang on the wall. I'm going to cry my heart out. And I'm sitting on the bus, and I'm so angry that why does everyone else have it good and I have it hard?" And as the bus gets down to Shmuel HaNavi, he turns left instead of turning right. He said, "This driver is nuts. What's with him?" So maybe there's a construction site. Maybe there's a Chayfetz Chashud. Maybe there's a... I don't know. Then I said, "Nah, the people in Sanhedria, you know, the plush Americans. They probably worked out that the route should circumvent, you know, so they, fine thing. Now what you know is who you know in this country." So I turn around to the guy next to me. "You live in Sanhedria?" He goes, "Yeah, yeah." "Very nice. So anyone going to the coast, let's go all the way around Sanhedria." He goes, "What are you talking about?" He says, "Since when does the number 3 bus turn left at Shmuel HaNavi?" And he tells me, "You're not on the number 3 bus. You got on the wrong bus." So I said to myself, I had 100 reasons why the bus turned left. But that I was on the wrong bus, that didn't occur to me. You know, it's so easy to blame the world around us. And I have learned over the years how to deal with my lack of focus. Flow with the wind, it takes you to good places. I'm not going to be a brain surgeon or a fighter pilot or a POSEC because you have to have an instant. But I've learned when it comes to explaining a difficult piece of Gemara, I know the blockage in that kid's head because I went through it. The Rabbanu Shalom knows exactly who we are, where we are, and how we are. You look at a map of Yerushalayim. It's different than any. Everything is circles, half circles, semicircles. No long avenues. Everything changes his name. Yerushalayim was slowly started from the old city, and with great Mesiris Nefesh was taken Shchuna by Shchuna. People that came to live in Meir Shar and Beis Yisrael in this area, you can't imagine what they went through. It wasn't planned. But when you look at the final map, it was planned. And the same is true for our lives. Our lives aren't planned. But we're all on a bus. So the Sfasema says, why is the Yom Tov of Purim called Pur? It's a Goyrel. So it was a Goyrel. So the whole Yom Tov is based on a Goyrel? No. The Goyrel came out, Chas V'Shalom, to destroy Klal Yisrael. But it can't be to destroy Klal Yisrael. That can't happen. So Hashem had no choice but to reverse it. But had the Goyrel not fallen on a day, the Chas V'Shalom could have been the end of Klal Yisrael, there would have been no need to reverse it. Says the Sfasemis, that's the Yesod of Purim. The very moments in your life that you think is the worst moment, I have the biggest disappointment in the world, that's the contradiction in your life. That's the stira that is needed for the bracha to start. I started teaching 8th grade about 30, 35 years ago. I came in and I took this course beforehand and I was told that you got to be really tough because if not, 8th graders are going to eat you up alive, which is true. And I was told, you come in, you got to be really strict and don't smile until Hanukkah. And I was even told you walk in and your hat should be a little bit on the tilt and you should stand there with your hands folded and, you know, stare them down. And as the kids come in and they sit down, just change your seats. For what reason? Sancheriv Melech Ashur, when he came into a country, he changed everything. Moved all peoples around. Then you have control. Don't let people where you are. Just tell people to change seats. You, there. No, don't even talk. And I walked in, and I did everything according to the book. My tilted hat. I stood with my hands folded, and the kids walked in. My father sends regards. You dare talk to a Rebbe? And they all sit down, they're staring at me. And I'm like, no, but I want to say to my friend. They move around. And I want to tell you, at that moment, it felt really good. Really did. It felt like the world was mine. I am in control, you know? And I, of course, took it a step too far. And I leaned back on my chair on the back two legs. And Ma'asa Kadosh Baruch Hu, and Rav Hashem sent the Malach Gabriel. And here, like 2 seconds into my teaching career, whoop! I don't know what hit me. All of a sudden, I was staring at the ceiling. And the kids were seeing the back of my shoes. I know you're supposed to teach with your soul, but this is like a... And of course, what did they do? They all jumped up and started running toward me. And as they all jumped up, and I'm screaming, get back in your seats, get back! Everything, I blew it. You know what I mean? They're like, and we sit down, and I'm like trying to recover from this, and I get on, because your hat is on the floor. I didn't ask you! And they're like shruggy, and I start teaching, and they burst into laughter. And I get up, and I go into the principal's office. This is like 5 seconds into my teaching career. And I say, that's it, I give up. And they look at me, you give up? And that's the shortest teaching career in the history of the world. I said, what happened? So I told him what happened. So the principal starts laughing. I said, well, you're also a machutzif, so what do you expect? So he says to me, I want to tell you something, he says to me. I saw the way you walked into class. I saw the way you walked into the class. I saw the way you walked into the classroom. And he said, well, I have to, because the kids are going to eat me up alive. Yeah. They're not eating you up alive so fast. No, you have to have control. And listen to this, what he told me, because it's a life lesson. You have to have discipline, not control. So I asked him, what is the difference between control and discipline? He said, discipline means things have to learn, go with a seder, in a classroom and in your own personal life. And there has to be, if a kid talks, when there's a price to pay for it. Shouldn't be a huge price, shouldn't be overdone, but there has to be a system in place. And kids want discipline. We want discipline in our lives. What's control? Control is my way or the highway. You come into a classroom. No one gets out of their seat unless the Rebbe says you can. That's control. Discipline is, get out of your seat, you're going to have to wait an extra 5 minutes before you go to recess. It made me very angry about it. So I said, I'm still not hearing the difference so much. So he told me, control is a din in the gavra. I'm in control. Discipline is a din in the cheftza. So I said, what's the practical difference? The practical difference is like this. If it's control, if the issue is control, it's very hard to adjust. It doesn't go your way. No, when it's your own covet, it's very hard to adjust. If the issue is the chefza, then you can adjust it class by class. Some classes need a higher level of discipline, some less. Some kids. If it's discipline, you can work with it. He said, you came into that room controlling. It wasn't going to work, it was going to crash, I know you. So Kadosh Baruch Hu did you the biggest favor. He said, we're going to stop this. And he flipped you, literally. Now go back in there. They're all going to laugh, he says, and you would too if you were a kid. Go in there and laugh with them. And you're going to laugh with them and things are going to fall into place. He said, but it's going to be very hard for me to discipline the class now. He said, that's true, it's going to be harder. Okay. So Kadosh Baruch Hu put you into that situation. You'll work with it. And I worked with it. I had my ups, I had my downs, but I worked with it. So I had a boy in my class, I'm not going to use real names, we'll call him Yankee, okay? It's Yankee, if anyone hears the name Yankee, no, I do not mean you. I used to use the name Gimple in all my tapes. And then a father called me up and he said that his kid is named Gimple. I wanted to ask him why. And then all the kids in his class make fun of him because of your stories. So I said, I'd have to use the name. So he tried to use a Yankee Moshe Baruch, Kama Yankee Zika Beshuka. You know, a lot. But if you use an odd name, so Yankee, okay? This Yankee in my class, all right, there's a Yankee here. Hey, this guy's name is Yaakov Gimple. That's the one I meant, okay? He was the biggest terror. In my 30 years of teaching, I never had anyone that came close to Yaakov Gimple. Yaakov Gimple would come into class. Rebbe, you rip my Gemara. I know he would come up to my Gemara and rip the pages out. If I sent him out of the room, his parents were there 5 minutes later. You are destroying our child. Treat him with love. Well, treat him with love, but he's ripping up my Gemara. This went on every single day. He would get angry, close the lights, throw tables. And his parents were very well connected. And I was told, good Sabbath. And I got to tell you, it was a very hard year. I just couldn't work around it. And again, I told my principal later in the year, for the second time I was retiring. He said, it's the second time you're retiring. He said, ain miyat achemiyat el l'rabbis. That means you're staying. I said, I'm not going to get it. He says, it's Yaakov Gimple is not the norm. Okay? It's not the norm. And he gave me a very good book. The book is called The Broken Record. And the book basically said like this. and it talks about disciplining children, disciplining yourself. If you say to a kid, okay, leave the room, please. No, I'm not going to leave the room. What are you going to do about it? You talking to me that way? Are you talking to your Rebbe that way? Yes, I am talking to my Rebbe that way. You're in trouble, kid one. Rebbe zero, kid 10. Repeat what you want to say, he said, like a broken record. No emotion whatsoever. Yaakov Gimple, leave the room. No, you can't tell me what to do. Leave the room. No, my father's up by the board of directors. I'll make sure you don't get a bonus for the next 20 years. Leave the room. Everyone's laughing. You can't tell me to leave the room. Leave the room. I'm not gonna. Eventually, he gets up and he leaves the room. What's the trick over here? Trick is, show no emotion. Because I'm disciplining, I'm not controlling. It's not, if it's personal, forget it. Then I start yelling. The higher I start yelling, the more the kid's chutzpah, his kid sees his chutzpah is working, the more he's going to do. And if you can maintain a level balance, eventually he's going to give in. Did it work for Yaakov Gimple? No, because I'm the fool. I did it a few times as I walk out. He said, it's not going to help. I read the book. I left it on my desk. But I learned afterwards in my life, when things weren't going my way, I would learn to discipline myself. I'm not in the mood of davening. Daven. I'm not in the mood of davening. You have this. No, it doesn't work for me, davening. I'm not in the mood of learn. You begin to talk to yourself that way. And the world eventually begins to change. And you soon begin to understand that there is no discipline unless there's a challenge. My sixth grade teacher, boy, I really gave him a run for his money. I always tell my kids, please, before they become a chas, before the night of the chuppah, they should call up all the English teachers and ask mechila. So he wanted to get even with me, and he gave me all out to an assignment on one of the presidents, and the president that he gave me was James Knox Polk. He said, no, you go do a 10-page assignment. So in those days, I went to the library, and I asked, is there a book about James Knox Polk? And the librarian said, why would anyone write a book about James Knox Polk? I said, well, he was the 11th president of the United States. I said, and somebody would want to, maybe some teacher punished someone, and then he has to write a book about him. So he says, there's no book about James Knox Polk. He says, there's a book about all the presidents, and there's like 2 pages on him. So I took that book. And I did notice something about the president. You see the Yeridus HaDoiris. Jefferson took off his shaitel. Madison took off his white socks. As long as you see the Doiris. Kennedy took off his hat, you know. And then the thought occurred to me. I said, you know, how come there's no... If he was the 11th president of the United States, how come there's no James Knox Polk Bridge? There's no James Knox Polk Tunnel. There's a Lincoln Tunnel. There's a... Right, Manhattan Bridge goes to Manhattan, the Brooklyn Bridge goes to Brooklyn, the Queensboro Bridge goes to Queens, and the Holland Tunnel goes to. But there's an FDR Drive, there's a Lincoln Tunnel, there's a George Washington Bridge, there's a Benjamin Franklin. How come there's no James Knox Polk Bridge? And the answer is because there was no real challenge in his presidency. He had a very boring presidency. There was no war, actually was, but there was an ongoing war with Mexico, but there was nothing new. There was nothing new happening in his life. He was never challenged. He was one of the few presidents that failed to be nominated for a second term, never mind losing the election. And I said, if there was no Civil War, then you would have never heard of Lincoln either. If there was no Revolutionary War, you would never heard of Washington. If there was no challenge in our lives, then we wouldn't be who we are. Moshe Rabbeinu sees all the contradictions in the world. And he says, if not for these contradictions, and we would not, our koyach will not come out mi koyach alapayel. It'll never happen. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu looks at a lot of numbers. He says, it's all one number. There's one map of Yerushalayim, even though there's 1,000 streets going in different directions. In your life, it looks like there's 1,000 contradictions, because Baruch Hu says, no, it's one puzzle for you to come out who you are. And ein bracha shoyer lebedavar asamim min ha'ayin. That's if you have to count. Says the Sfasemis, the Satan has an effect on us if things look different. But Moshe Rabbeinu, who understands that all of the stiras in his life are one, then there is no contradiction, and there's no problem afterwards. And it all comes around again to the same thing. If we weren't challenged, then we wouldn't be who we are. If we weren't challenged, then there wouldn't be any life for us. And to the point, we're going to get up there. It says that all the neshamas have to go through Adam HaRishon before they pass away. Right afterwards, I'm sorry. It says in the Ma'aris HaMechpela, the Tikkun HaZohar says all neshamas go through Adam. Adam HaRishon says, listen, I blew it by the Chet Eitz Hadas. The world is full of contradictions since then. Your nesyonis in your life, your Shmiras HaNayim, your Shmiras HaMachshava, everything was to pick up the pieces. Did you do what you had to do? And we're going to say, I didn't know that's what I had to do. What do you mean? That was your nesyon. And when we say, no, I stood up to my challenges, Adam is so proud of us. And the Tver Shlomo says, Ezu derech sheyivaloi is right, koshi teferes lo min ha'adam. We'll be proud of Adam Arishna as our neshama goes through the Ma'aris HaMechpela and Shemayim. So to wrap things up, driving to Lakewood, and my brother-in-law says, here, go to the basket, I have exact change. Okay? And I drive up to the basket, leaving the Garden State Parkway, he goes back many years ago, and he goes, oops, I don't have exact change. Change my jacket. And you needed 35 cents, and everybody starts looking and looking and looking, and we put together 30 cents. We're missing a nickel. So he says, just put in the 30 cents and go weiter. So we think it's the mikvah, this is the toll, but it doesn't work. What happens if you go through and you don't pay toll? I don't know, the police will stop you and you'll show them your license. They go, my license, I left it at home. Now I'm really stuck. And I look behind me, and there's a line of cars beeping, and there's this big sign, you can't back up by a toll booth, but I couldn't back up anyway. I said, what do we do? I said, I don't know. Of course, I was hoping against hope there would be some yid behind me. I see all these shuvim umais behind me. So my brother-in-law tells me, after he told me to go here, he says, you have to go out and ask for a nickel. I said, you want me to schnorr a nickel from a bunch of Puerto Ricans? Yes! There's no choice! And I remember, I like, okay, Rav Shalom, you write the script, this is what you want. Here we go! And I opened the door, and as I opened the door, I see there's a bunch of nickels and quarters laying on the floor from people that threw it at the basket I missed. Although I'm Jewish, I just picked up one nickel. I said to myself afterwards, the Eibishter creates the refuah before the makkah. There's so much bracha in our lives. So much bracha. You have to go through an asayin to be able to challenge it. But if you get angry and you yell at it, or you start blaming, then you don't find those coins that are because bracha already prepared for you. So you're all entering, some of you anyway, a different phase of life. And the way to be able to do it is to get onto the right bus. You have to have the right chaverim, and you have to be in the right sviva. So my trip is sponsored by Landers, and I'm there once a week to give a shir, and to hang around a little bit for the bachur. But I'm just a very, very tiny little particle in the whole thing. I just noticed over the years that there are rebbeim that are so committed, so warm. If anyone tells you, come to me, you won't have any problems, don't believe him. There's no free lunch. I remember ordering once checks. I'm one of those people who still order checks. Guys, you want a free wallet? Sure, I'm Jewish, right? Why the Yidden have two luchais? They asked the Yidden asked how much does it cost? Hashem said for free, give us two, right? So I said, sure, I want a free leather wallet. Yeah, why not? Okay, how much is the order of the check? She tells me $74. I said, how much is it without the free wallet? $33. Fine, I'll take it without the free wallet, okay? If anyone tells you that the sense that I have in this yeshiva is that it's a place where working with your rebbeim, working with mashgichim, rosh yeshivas, there's a mahalach in life. There's a mahalach in life to take the issues that run up against us and to convert them into bracha. And if you're looking for, if there's pressure for a degree, or that's your understanding, so there's two ways to go about it. You can go to college and say, yeah, I'll be kovei itim, which you won't wind up doing, or may. Or you can say, I'm going to learn. I'm going to have a regular first seder, and really in a very, very pleasant, unbelievable, positive environment, a regular night seder and a shachris, and I'm going to get a much more respectable degree in the afternoon. It's going to take me much further than anywhere else. I think that it's definitely something that, if you're in that channel, it's something to look into. But either way, next time you get on the wrong bus, don't blame the driver. Just thank Hashem that he's trying to guide you to find bracha in your own life. Thank you very much.